An interesting passage of scripture for a Sunday morning, perhaps. But our journey throughout the theme of this past year, called God's Love in Action, has taken us quite a distance. We've looked around at the stories about Jesus and some of the sayings of Jesus. We've looked at stories around the advent and birth of Jesus. We have studied stories of Jesus' death and resurrection. We have looked at some of the stories of the early church. And in fact, some of our own stories being shown, or how God's love was shown to us in our own lives. What have we learned about ourselves? What have we learned about the church? Since Easter, we've studied some of the lessons of the early church as they appear in the book of Acts. The commission Jesus gave them for mission had been that, quote, "You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." And the disciples had obediently carried out this directive through many difficulties, reverses, and other issues. And now they were poised to reach directly into the world of the Gentiles and begin sharing the gospel across the Roman Empire. Today's focus finds Paul and Barnabas about to take on a new challenge. There is something exciting about this account in Acts. Paul and Barnabas, along with John Mark, are about to leave for Asia Minor, wondering what will meet them there, but full of enthusiasm and expectation about what God will do among the people they will meet. The trip begins somewhat inauspiciously. They spend only a few days in Cyprus. They meet an unsavory character named Elymas. They have a confrontation with him and leave him blind for a time, wondering what in the world has happened to him. And then they journey to Antioch in Pisidia. And as was their practice, they go up to the synagogue and proceed to share the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that the promise of God to Israel has been fulfilled in Jesus of Nazareth. And even though he's been killed, he rose again from the dead and has forgiven and justified all those who believe in him. There's an optimism and excitement about the next stage. It's quite different from the kind of place where the church is now. Many churches and many denominations are feeling that early in the 21st century, North America, the church is declining. I read news feeds every week about the church throughout North America. And this week there was a particularly shocking story about the largest denomination in North America, in which their leader was fired. The Me Too movement caught up with him. And if you don't know what the Me Too movement is, look it up. It's out there. One of the most prominent independent churches, the pastor there, who is world famous, has been forced to leave 6 months early because seven women accused him before the church elders of having been inappropriate. Many factors have been blamed for falling church attendance. But let's suffice it to say that the church itself is searching for its own purpose and meaning. Many churches have lost their way and wonder about the future. It is a timely topic, I think, for the church to engage upon. And I think two questions are important right now. How should the church be in the world? What is its purpose in our world, such as it is now? And the second one is, how should we be the church in the world, here at Covenant? And I want to just address those two topics with you briefly here this morning. Let's take them in the order I gave them. How should the church be in the world? And you may disagree with me and all of the different things I put here. And that is perhaps a good thing, because it needs to be a conversation, not just a monologue. And I would hope that you would think of them as a way of engaging the conversation for our particular denomination. You see, our church, our conference, is now engaged in looking for a new executive director. We have had a kind of restructuring, we have had a kind of reorganization, and the church itself is looking for the next direction. And part of this is part of what the whole church in North America is going through, but part of it is our own journey. And so how can we truly be the church for our time in the here and the now? Let me make some suggestions here, and I will give you two alternatives and suggest one and not the other. In the first case, I believe that the church needs to be the wounded healer and not the conquering superstar. For so long, the church has been tried to be everything. For so long, the church has sought to wear the sword rather than the cross. And I believe that that is one of the things that the church needs to relearn again: how to be the wounded healer, to admit our need for God ourselves, rather than the ones who have accomplished because God has always been on their side. Secondly, I believe that the church needs to be a student of life and not an ivory tower scholar. It's really easy to stand behind the pulpit and tell you all what you should know or how you should live. The church is not infallible. The church is made up of fallible people. And for us, especially as people rooted in Mennonite history and Mennonite experience, we should know that our understanding of hearing and following the teachings of Jesus come from a conversation within the church about how and who we are together. We should be students of life. What are our issues? What are the kinds of needs that we have? What are the kinds of issues that impinge on our church, impinge on our community, impinge on our lives? How can we address those? Rather than read all kinds of books, hear all kinds of remedies, and then impose them on a people without the experience and attachment to them. Thirdly, we need to be participants, not bystanders. For so often, the church has been reserved and set aside. The world at large goes on here, and the church is reserved for a Sunday kind of approach. 6 days a week, we live in our community. The seventh day, we go and talk about God. The church needs to be a participant in all of life, not just part of it. Linked to that, the church needs to be present and not missing. Where are we in the world in which we live? Are we part of what's happening in our communities? Or are we mysteriously absent? Fifthly, the church needs to be compassionate, helpful, and loving, as opposed to judgmental or perhaps condemning. It doesn't necessarily mean we agree with everything, but the point is our hearts need to be open to the people around us, not just because we want to tell them how to live, but because we feel and we live in our pain together. Number six, we need to be truthful and not dissembling. The church has lost its way when it starts to speak frequently, because it seems to be speaking because it's parroting phrases that no longer hold. The church often seems to feel that it doesn't need to speak the truth because it is the truth. Too many people speak on behalf of the church who really do not have a right to speak for the church. Truth telling is one of the great needs of our time. A seventh element is that the church needs to be patient, not impulsive or rash. There's a real sense to find out what's going wrong and to right it immediately. One of our great church scholars in the Anabaptist circles, Alan Kreider, wrote a book just before he died called The Patient Ferment of the Early Church. In it, he talked about the way in which the early church grew. It was often, well, they didn't have radar in those days, but it was often under the radar. It wasn't really noticed. But it was people like you and me walking through our communities, helping out here and there, singly, one at a time, looking at issues that perhaps affected people, people who had not enough to eat, people who had no childcare, people who perhaps struggled with health. They would just do the one thing that was necessary: loving, caring. And over the centuries, the church grew. For some strange reason, all of a sudden, there are not just few people, but many people scattered throughout the empire, but in fact, throughout the world. How did that happen? How was that so misread? How come all these people are here, all claiming to follow Jesus. Patience. Doing the right thing, one person at a time. The church needs to be a servant, not the Lord himself. The church often seeks to be the authority in so many things. Perhaps we need to be the suffering servant and learn that from our Master Jesus Christ. And finally, the church needs to be life-affirming, not soul-destroying. I sometimes wonder whether we have really heard the calls and the cries from our world. We seem to rain down judgment over many people for different things. I wonder, have we really heard them? Think of issues like assisted death. There is a cry for people, from people, who suffer with issues facing them, their health, facing their families, who seem to give up hope. Why is that? Where is the church? Where is the church when it is needed most? What kind of hope can it offer? There are many who can, and there are some who suggest that people take the easy way out. Not necessarily easy, I should never say that. But take a different way out. How can we affirm life in the midst of pain and suffering and deep, deep agony? I think that's a challenge for the church. I think the church should take that on board as seriously as anything they've ever taken before. Then the second question I have, how should we be the church in our world? We are one of the most privileged churches in the world. We have everything we need. We have wealth. Many of us have health. We have freedom. We have opportunity. We can afford to be generous. Is that what we're known for? In some cases, yes. I think that's part of what needs to happen from churches like ours. Churches like those in our community. We need to be some of the most generous people in the world. With our time, with our energy, with our resources, because there are so many people in great need. That's one way of how we can be in the world. We also need to be helpful. We have incredible skills. We have incredible training. We have all kinds of opportunity. We have the skills to impart to other people to help them help themselves. And so our church here in Winkler can be that kind of positive influence in the world. We need to be people of integrity. even when it costs us. What does that mean for us in our community? What does it mean for us as we live our lives before one another, before our nation, and before the nations of the world? What does it mean to have integrity? We need to be a welcoming church. I believe we are a welcoming church here at Covenant. I believe we are a welcoming church here in Winkler. All we need to do is just see the incredible number of different nationalities that have made this place home. But often as not, there still are too many sidewalks that have traffic going one way, and on the other sidewalk, traffic going the other way. I wonder how many of us know our neighbor well. How many of us know them for who they are? Some of us do. Some of us don't do that enough. And how many of us are socially engaged? How many of us really see the issues as they work themselves out in our communities? You know, our youth have found that far more than we have. It is our youth now that are teaching us, I believe. We look around ourselves. What are the issues, the prevailing issues that require us as churches to speak out for those who are perhaps unjustly treated? What about reconciliation? That's a word that our youth are telling us we need to take seriously. What does it mean to be reconciled? What does it mean with the truth and reconciliation directives that we've been given? The opportunities that we have with continuing First Nations. Have we taken those on board? What about the higher incidence, at least public now, of women who have come forward and saying, this world isn't equitable? What about the abuse? What about the advantage taken? What about all of those things? Are we as a church speaking into that world? The church in the early church, the new movement, the Jesus followers, they stood at the precipice of a brave new world. They had no idea where that was going to go. All they knew was that Jesus was calling them forward. And here are Paul and Barnabas with this young helper, John Mark, standing at the precipice, wondering what in the world they were going to do. They had no experience of this before. I sometimes feel like that's where we are. We've been working in a world that is fairly comfortable, that is fairly cloistered, that is fairly self-assured about who it is. But the church now is looking for that next place to be. How are we thinking about that? How are we as a little congregation, but also within the realm of the wider congregations, how are we thinking about this church, our conference, our faith? What place does it have in our world? Is it still relevant? Are we listening to our young people? Are we hearing what they say? Are we moving forward in confidence or are we fearful? Do we wonder what will happen if we follow God? I think Paul and Barnabas felt the same thing. If you read into the next chapter, they go to this little town called Iconium. They're turfed out. So they go to the next town called Lystra, and the people from Iconium follow them. And there they incite the crowds against them and stone Paul to the point where he is considered dead, and they throw them outside the city walls. Nonplussed, waits till they're gone, he gets up, walks, gets back together with Barnabas, and off they go to the next city. It isn't quite that simple. But you wonder, what kind of stick-to-itiveness did they have? How could they engage something so personally overwhelming in their lives and take it to people even when they were not just unappreciated, but threatened with very life? I don't want that for us, but I want us to think how seriously we need to take this time for our churches, for our congregations, the needs that are present, and who we are to be in this world here and now. May God have mercy on us and give us insight as we continue to grapple with these issues. Amen.